Hi, this is Tom Regan. I'm a licensed addiction counselor and certified grief counselor for Heartview Foundation in Bismarck, and welcome to Recovery Chronicles. This is a half-hour interview program that celebrates recovery from alcohol and drug addiction. And our very special guest today is Amanda Ebach, and she's originally from Devil's Lake, but now living in Bismarck. She has been in recovery, I'm happy to say, for 6 years. Her drug of choice was alcohol. And Amanda, thank you for having the courage to be on the program and to talk about recovery and your life.
Thank you for the opportunity.
You bet. I wanted to say, I heard you speak actually just last week, and you did such a wonderful job, so right after Amanda spoke, you know, I kind of ran up to her and I said, hey, we would sure like you to be on the radio program, Recovery Chronicles. So tell us a little bit about your growing up years, if you don't mind.
Yes. My parents were quite young when I was born. My dad was 18 and already an alcoholic. My mom was 17. They split up when I was really young, and it broke my heart.
Yeah. How old were you?
I would say probably about 3 or 4.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I remember I used to pray every night that they would get back together.
Hmm. Yeah.
But my dad was angry, mean, and could be violent when intoxicated.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I remember always feeling sad and always having a lot of worries as a child. My mom raised me on her own. She put herself through college and work to pay the bills and keep a roof over her head and food on the table. She had a very hard time.
Mm-hmm.
She felt a lot of pain, stress, sadness, and loneliness. And I was aware that she was struggling and quite empathetic of what she was going through, even though I didn't really quite understand because I was so young.
Mm-hmm.
So then I saw my dad once in a while. He was always drunk and always upsetting my mom and I. There are very few happy memories of my dad. I was always nervous when I was around him because he was so unpredictable.
Sure.
So I saw him less and less as I got older until he moved away when I was 15. Mm-hmm. And he continued his battle with alcoholism until he died of cancer in 2015.
I'm sorry. So that's pretty recent.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So when were you, I'm sorry for that sad past that you had to have. So how and when were you introduced to drugs or alcohol?
Well, my dad was always drinking. I don't have any memories or pictures of him not drinking. There was always
sad.
Very. There was always a party going on, and I was always there when I was in my dad's care. My mom had no knowledge of what went on when I was with my dad.
Right.
I kept it a secret from everyone.
Yeah.
So as I was a little girl, I would sit on his knee amongst the smoking circle.
Uh-huh.
I grabbed my dad's beer and I took a drink and I gave it back to him. And
yeah.
I did that for I don't know how long, but
did you like the taste of it?
Probably not.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And so I did that for I don't know how long, and then I remember grabbing the beer, chugging it until he made me give it back to him.
I see. Oh, boy. Yeah.
And so so even then.
Even then. How old did you say you were?
Oh, yeah. Probably, you know, 5, mm-hmm. 6.
Right. You know, I mean, funny thing, and my mother, who is no longer with us, was not an alcoholic, but I clearly recall being on her lap. At probably the age of 5, and begging her for a sip of out of her glass of beer, and they drank it cold.
Yeah.
But Guess what? I liked the taste of it, which was probably unusual for, and I think you know I'm a person in long-term recovery, and mm-hmm. beer was really the first, yep. you know, my so-called first drug of choice, but go on.
So even at that age, I was trying to be a part of the social group, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and that's what motivated me to take that drink of the beer was to feel like I was a part of the group and what was going on.
Sure.
But then I also realized the more of the beer that I drank, that I felt the physical effect. And then that in turn made me want to drink more. It was around that circle that I learned about marijuana and the different ways to smoke it.
You witnessed this.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
At an early age. Yeah. So, so how did that affect you? How did that whole experience affect you once you got to junior high school or high school?
Well, it affected me quite a bit, I guess, because I was already confident or comfortable, I guess, in my using. Mm-hmm. Sure. And it's always been natural for me to find those people that were like me or, you know, that had the same interests of sure. as I did to party and drink and drug and so on.
Does this mean it affected your grades or your...
Oh, yes, yeah, absolutely. Uh-huh.
And,
yes.
And did you participate in any sports, anything like that?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope,
yeah.
I never did.
Yeah. Yeah.
The only thing I ever participated mm-hmm. in was choir, but mm-hmm. yeah, no, it did affect my my attendance and my performance in school.
And so even early on, it was having an effect.
Yes.
I mean, you were really exhibiting some of the so-called symptoms of substance abuse.
Yes.
When and how did it start to get bad, so to speak?
I guess I would have to say when it really got bad was probably when I graduated from high school and mm-hmm. moved away and got my own apartment. Mm-hmm. You know, it was then that the drinking became more and more frequent. The drug use became more and more frequent. Mm-hmm. I mean, it got to the point where I wasn't even paying my bills. I had a car repossessed and everything because of my using, mm-hmm. you know, trying to support my habits
sure.
and the habits of my friends.
And difficult for you to hold a job, perhaps, or
not at that point.
Yeah.
No, I was able to, for the most part, hang on to my jobs, mm-hmm. But I wasn't the employee that I should have been.
Sure, sure. Did you hit? And you've heard you've heard this term, I know, but did you hit any sort of bottom? You know, where it you just. You just were starting to give up hope and such.
Absolutely, yes. I've hit too many bottoms to count, mm-hmm. actually. I've done and said things that I never thought possible. Mm-hmm. I'm unrecognizable when I'm using, and people have told me that. And it consumed... I was so consumed that I can only describe it as being, I always used to describe it as being possessed with two demons, addiction and clinical depression. Mm-hmm. And they're best friends. And they work together against me.
Right.
And they rob me of my life, my soul, and my will to live. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I use that to explain to people how I felt inside for a long, long time.
Mm.
Sure. So, because for me, I feel like, you know, I have a dual diagnosis and that makes it a little bit more complicated because I was depressed. So I drank.
Yeah.
And I drank. So I was depressed. I mean, it was just like a vicious circle. I started trying to self-medicate.
Which one were you treated for first or which one were you diagnosed with first?
The depression. Alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. At the age of 17, I told my mom that I wanted to commit suicide and she made an appointment for a doctor's visit to me. And at that point I went on antidepressants and, it was after that treatment that I felt that I had experienced for the first time in my life, what it felt like to be quote unquote normal. I always described it as like this black cloud over me. And after the medication took effect, I felt like that black cloud was removed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, because my drinking progressed so much, the medication wasn't able to work.
Yeah, so it negated the effects of the meds. Do you feel of course it depends on which medication you were put on, but did you feel that you were addicted at all to the meds?
No. Not at all. Yeah. As a matter of fact, it was hard for me to take them on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was hard for you to take them on a regular basis?
It was.
Why? Because
I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. I guess because when I would start feeling better,
yeah,
I would be like, okay, I'm feeling better. I don't need to take, it wasn't as important, or I wasn't as driven to take them when I was feeling some relief from the depression.
Sure. But now you probably
now
should
I
have
know
stayed.
That yeah right
you probably should have did they have any other side effects that you
no
that you didn't like or
mm-hmm. no
yeah so when was your drinking at its worst and how much did you drink
5 years ago mm-hmm. 5 years ago my drinking was at its worst, and that is when that's when I realized that I had to choose my bottom, because there's no depth of hell that my addiction won't take me to.
Mm.
So mm-hmm. 5 years ago, I wanted to die so bad that there was nothing else to do but live. And I knew that I couldn't do that if I continued on drinking. So mm-hmm. I was drinking every day. It consumed every thought, every waking moment. I basically held a job to drink, know, I worked to drink and to pay bills so that I could, everything so that I could continue to drink.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so.
What did you finally do?
How
did you seek help?
Mm-hmm. I finally, was able to find a support system and a support group within the area.
Mm-hmm. Good. Good.
Yep.
And did you go to any kind of formal treatment?
No.
Okay. Well, good for you. I mean, that's,
no.
As you know, that's probably somewhat unusual.
Yes.
You know, so.
I was 21 years old when I first went to try to seek some help on my own. Mm. And and then it took me 13 years of pain and agony before I was ready to change.
Mm. Sure, sure. Was there one precipitating event? I mean, was there one event, one thing that happened that kind of hit you over the head, or, how common that is. Sometimes it's a car accident or an arrest or something like that.
No, actually, it was not a single event. It was more like 22 years of addiction taking everything from me until there was nothing left to take.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How's your relationship with your mother? Is your mother still in the picture?
Yes, yes. We have a great relationship.
Good. Is she living here or in the eastern part of
the state? She lives in the northern part of the state.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's good.
Yes.
What would you say, and you've mentioned a support group. What would you say is helped you most in the early days of your recovery?
Well, definitely the support group and support system that taught me the tools of how to talk about the past, feel it, process it, and let it go.
Mm-hmm.
And also taught me how to live a new life and how to live it better. Those things eventually gave me back my soul, my hope, and my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
And also, I learned very early on that my thinking was very problematic. I didn't realize that we had control over our thoughts. I just thought that, well, that's just the way that my mind works and, there's nothing that I can do about it. And once I learned that that isn't the case, then I started practicing, positive thinking as opposed to the negative thinking. And that has been very
wonderful.
Yes, it's changed everything in my life.
And there's that wonderful word called gratitude. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that that hopefully we in recovery learn early on to start practicing, because we're in the throes of our using, we're not usually thinking about gratitude.
Yeah.
Isn't that right?
Yeah. And the other thing too, early on, besides specifically using and following the suggestions of a mentor, mm-hmm. She was essential in me learning to resist the urge, the cravings,
right,
of drinking.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, if I had an urge to drink, I satisfied that urge regardless of the consequences. It didn't matter to me what the consequences were. I wanted to drink, so I drank. This time around, I learned to fight the urge for the first time.
Yeah.
Feel it, suffer through it, and let it pass.
Okay. And then they usually say, think through the act, all the way through to the consequences of that act, right?
Yep. Yeah. Yep. And that's exactly what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes it, it's an invaluable tool.
Yeah. Yeah. And they also say, avoids people, places, and things, mm-hmm. Tend to be huge triggers.
Yep.
So that's another one of those tools. So what is your life like now after 5-6 years of recovery?
Now my life is more beautiful and peaceful than I ever thought possible. All that is good in me and in my life are mm-hmm. blessings from my higher power.
Mm-hmm.
Today I choose to live a life that is guided by a higher power, and it just keeps getting better and better. Even when I think that it couldn't possibly get any better, it does.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I remember early on in my recovery, I distinctly remember saying, my things are so good, I don't want things to get any better. Like, I just want things to just kind of, coast and, and now looking back, thinking about saying that is kind of silly, but.
Mm-hmm.
No, life is, it's better than I ever thought it could be. But that whole living in the moment, living one day at a time, I never lived that way. I never thought that way. I never thought that was possible. So that is what has made it so great.
Sure.
Just one 24 hours at a time.
Right. Which is what mindfulness is all about. Mm-hmm. And mindfulness as a practice or a therapy or a concept has really been around for decades, I think. But it seems that now every time you pick up a magazine, there's a new article about mindfulness. But it means just what you said. It means especially living in the moment,
mm-hmm.
and trying to find something to be grateful for.
Right.
Some of us, and I do, and perhaps you do too, but I keep a gratitude journal.
Mm-hmm.
And so this morning, that's one of the first things that I did. I usually number the page from 1 to 10 and write down the 10 things that I'm grateful for.
Yep.
And sometimes I go past that.
Right.
Yeah. And other times I get distracted and it takes me a little while, perhaps. But isn't it true?
Yes.
I was talking, and I'm a counselor, and I was talking with a patient this morning, and we agreed that the weather was something we could be grateful for today. Crisp North Dakota air. I mean, all the fall colors look so bright, and then the temperature is pretty decent, at least this week. Not sure it will be when you're listening to this program, but what are some of the things that you remind yourself to be grateful for in your recovery? And I should say that probably the first thing I write down is my recovery. because we know that without it, will have nothing, right?
Right. Absolutely. My sobriety is my biggest gratitude after my relationship with my higher power. For me, that's what it took. I knew that that's what it was going to take. Mm-hmm. It was difficult for me because I don't come from a family who's very religious or spiritual, you know, in the way that they live their lives. Not saying that they don't believe or whatever, but it just isn't a real way of life. Mm-hmm. So that was a little bit difficult for me because I was going against what everybody that I know does, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
But I'm staying true to my beliefs, and that is definitely my biggest gratitude is that I don't have to walk each day alone, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. You know, you've heard the expression, you can't be an atheist in a foxhole, or I'm probably just adapting it somewhat, but you don't meet many atheists
mm-hmm.
In a foxhole, referring to war, of course. But I also think I can adapt that to say you don't meet many people in recovery who are atheists, you know,
right.
And as you know, Heartview, where I work, is a program based on spirituality.
Right.
So,
you know, the one thing that I thank God for every day that you probably wouldn't guess that most people don't have on their gratitude list. Every mm-hmm. day I thank God for my trials and my tribulations.
Mm-hmm. And good for you. And I think that's wisdom.
I mean it.
Yeah. I think that we probably learn most from our trials and tribulations, as long as we're willing to
right.
learn from them, and as long as we're willing to face them.
Yes.
Including the loss of a loved one.
Right.
I mean, that can be. That can be horrible, and it probably should be, you know,
yes.
if we loved that person and appreciated that person, but
it was horrible. You know, yeah. I was able to stay sober.
You lost your father.
I was mm-hmm. able to stay sober through watching my dad die a very slow, agonizing death. And it's mm-hmm. because of my recovery that I was able to not only be there and be present for him, but to also be of service to him. Mm-hmm. And give him, you know, actually, you know, something I didn't share when I spoke last week was that the last two weeks that I spent with him were the best 2 weeks that I've ever spent with him
mm-hmm.
because he was sober.
Sure.
They were the only 2 weeks I've ever spent with him sober.
He knew you were there.
He knew I was there.
And appreciated your being there. Isn't that a wonderful gift?
You know what he told me? He told me, you're giving me more than I deserve, he said.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I said,
wow, I'm getting all teary-eyed. You know, I mean, that is just a wonderful gift to have received.
Yeah.
Toward the end of his life there, and that must bring you so much peace.
It does.
You know, so much peace and closure.
It does.
Yeah. No, I'm very happy for you. So, how do you help others? I mean, so what do you? And there may be folks listening to this radio program right now who know they have a problem. And they've been putting it off, doing something about their problem. So how do you tell someone how to get help or what to do?
Well, I'll tell you what. I stayed in active addiction for many, many, many mm-hmm. years. Because
I never asked you how old you were. Do you mind?
No, I don't mind. I'm 38.
You're a young woman. Okay.
Yep. I was too afraid to do anything about it because, like I said, that life was all that I had ever known. And what I would say to you is to do it afraid. That's been my personal motto this year.
Yeah, I like that.
Because I am and always have been afraid of everything and everyone. And now I have learned that my thoughts and feelings don't have to control me.
Sure.
That I have power over them and that they shouldn't determine my actions. So now I just do it afraid. And it's the best thing that I could have ever done. It isn't easy, but neither is the alternative.
Right. I'd like to see that. Have you seen that on a T-shirt? I would like to see that.
No, I haven't.
I think we could go into business with that.
Yes.
I mean, you know, do it afraid is such a is such a wonderful slogan.
It is.
And is transitioning from addiction to recovery an easy thing to do? I mean, is it?
Nothing is easy, mm-hmm. But it's simple, meaning uncomplicated.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, nothing about the act of addiction life is easy. Mm-hmm. Nothing about, transitioning from an active user to being a person in recovery is easy, but it's worth it. It is so much more worth it.
Sure. Sure. And are you working? Do you work?
Yes.
And I take it you're probably working full time.
I work full time. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yep. Okay. Yep. And actually, I am actually pretty excited because I got hooked up with an organization in town in which I'm going to be mentoring adolescents who have substance abuse issues.
Oh my goodness. How nice. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really, I've never worked with adolescents before, so it's going to be really interesting. But, what is kind of funny is that when I was young, I had a big sister. I was part of a big sister program where I had a big sister.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I kind of see it as me being on the opposite side of that now.
Nice.
Yeah, and specifically, like I said, these adolescents have chemical dependency issues, and so.
Boy, yeah.
I am really.
You'll be a wonderful big sister, and just like you said, your trials and tribulations give you credibility as a mentor.
I'm grateful for my past. I'm grateful for all the pain that I have ever felt in my entire life. Yeah. I am. I'm grateful for it. I don't have to run from it anymore.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you've learned from it. It's made you a more whole person.
Yep.
You know, a more empathic person.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And I'm sure you're helping others every day. I mean, when I saw you and met you the other night, you were helping others.
Yeah.
Because you were talking about your experience. And telling others that not to give up.
That's right.
You know that there was hope. So you've been living in Bismarck now for how many years?
And 6 years.
6 years. Are there people who are that you run into who are surprised to learn? You know how much addiction or alcoholism or drug abuse there is in Bismarck or in North Dakota in general, or don't you normally have those conversations?
I generally don't have those conversations.
Do you think people would be surprised to learn sometimes?
Probably. I think that they would be surprised at the severity of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think that people quite understand how impactful that it's really plaguing society and families,
right?
And
right,
businesses and businesses. I mean, everybody is affected.
Certainly, yeah. And I asked you that question on the spot, but that's one of the purposes of Recovery Chronicles. I mean, of this program to create awareness. Well, I told you the time would go fast, and our time is up. And our guest has been Amanda Ebeck, who has been in recovery for over 5 years and lives in Bismarck, her drug of choice, alcoholism. Thank you so very, very much for being on the program. And we close the program usually with the serenity prayer. See, so let's do that. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thank you.
Thank you.